If it please the court, the Connor case involves a tragic injury to a young co-op lineman permanently injured because his co-employees did not even attempt to follow the safety rules of the co-op manual. Michael Connor was shocked and thrown from the work platform 15 feet to the ground because of a danger created by the negligence of the defendants themselves in carrying out the details of their work. The employer had done its job in providing the proper working safety tools, a bucket truck so the switch 25 feet in the air could be viewed up close, grounding wires, voltage tester, the employer training, and then of course the safety rules handbook. The employer had created a safe method of work, but the defendants affirmatively chose to violate the safety rules when it comes to de-energizing the lines. First, the employee must get close enough to the switch to see if it is a knife blade switch that will kill the electricity going to the platform where Ogletree and Connor were located, or if it's a bypass switch which does not kill the electricity. Instead, Defendant Kidwell, with Ogletree's supervision, was allowed to have an extendo stick from the ground to open the switch without identifying what kind of switch it was. Then he affirmatively chose not to ground the wires from a bucket truck per the safety manual. He chose not to test for voltage. This is 7,200 volt lines. So they voluntarily chose to violate these rules. And in addition, defendant Ogletree failed to have a tailgate safety meeting on site. And that's where the workers get together and you go over the details of the work, the dangers of the work, and who all was doing what particular task. Well, Michael Connor, when he was the last to get there, when he got there, he saw the supervisor Ogletree and another lineman on the platform working and was told by the supervisor, come on up, all clear. So the employer did everything it could to make this work site safe. But the dangerous risk came when the defendants affirmatively chose to violate the safety rules of the co-op manual.
Is there a difference in the two employees, Ogletree and Kidwell, because one was a supervisor and one was not?
No, they're both employees. One happens to be the supervisor, as with every crew, but basically they're the employees of the co-op.
Well, in Peters, the court held that the non-delegable duties include the duty to promulgate and enforce rules for the conduct of employees which would make the work safe. So I'm focusing on the word enforce, and the supervisor, I would assume, would be the one who would have some responsibility enforcing the safety rules where the other co-employee would not, Mr. Kidwell. Could you address whether that is an incorrect analysis of the non-delegable duty?
Yes, the employer is not the insurer of the employee's safety, and unless the master, somebody from an executive or some the head of the co-op, unless he is there directing the work, the master directing the work, then that's where the obligation ends for the master, and he is not considered to be a master directing the work. He is just a supervisor, one of the crew, an employee.
Well, the employer acts through its employees who have responsibilities, and so I thought part of your allegations against Mr. Ogletree was that he didn't require the other employee to, or any of the employees, to follow the protocol or follow the proper procedures.
That's true. That we, in our petition, cited that he was negligent in the details of his work in allowing going along with this shortcut procedure that employee Kidwell chose, and that is to basically violate all of the safety rules.
Well, and likewise in Peters, there's another non-delegable duty to give warnings, and the co-employee here did not give the warning, in fact gave incorrect information that electricity had not been turned off. Had been turned off was the incorrect information. Isn't that a non-delegable duty too under Peters?
I don't think so, no.
The duty to give warning of dangers of which the employee might reasonably be expected to remain in ignorance.
Well, they affirmatively chose to violate all safety rules, all of them.
Including, but they failed to give the correct warning. They incorrectly told them the status of whether or not the electricity had been turned off or not. And I'm just wondering if this was actually a non-delegable duty under Peters.
No.
Are you distinguishing between the duty to warn about the dangers of electricity or how to perform certain conduct is part of the employer's non-delegable duty, but where you've deviated from the norm and you fail to warn, you've done so, that's a detail of the work. That's different than the non-delegable duty.
They did just the opposite of warning. They affirmatively were negligent in stating, first Kidwell to the supervisor, all right, the line's dead, all clear, and then Ogletree affirmatively inviting Connor, if you will, to come on the platform. So there was a total systems failure here, a violation of all rules, and total ignorance of what was going on.
Who was it who told him it was safe? Was it the co-employee or the supervisor?
First, the co-employee, I consider them both,
right,
all be co-employees. First, Kidwell, who was assigned the duty of de-energizing the lines.
Right.
He flew open the switch, had no idea whether it was a kill switch or a bypass switch, and then told Ogletree, all right, all clear. And then Ogletree told the rest of the crew, okay, it's all clear, let's start work.
Okay, thank you.
The other kind of appendant issue was the trial court would not allow plaintiffs to have the employer's accident report. The employer is not a party to this lawsuit. In fact, he's an employer for all the parties. And we showed substantial need because, due, I guess, to the passage of time, the employees just didn't remember much about what went on that day. So I think three employees couldn't remember anything about it. So we showed substantial need and believe that we are entitled to the employer's report of the details of that particular day.
Is that in your point relied on? Is that a claim of error that you made in this court?
No, Your Honor. So what there seems to be a common theme in these cases, that is that the employer gives equipment, whether it's a motor vehicle, a forklift, a ladder, a guardrails, and because of the negligence of the co-employees in carrying out the details of work, whether it's running a stop sign, driving carelessly, failure to erect the ladder safely, like in the Bierman case, failure to put the guardrails up on the bleachers, because of that co-employee negligence in the details of the work, that there is liability and an act cause of action against the co-employees. There was talk of contributory negligence in the briefs, but that would be an issue for the jury of comparative fault. I believe it was considered to be a bar by the respondents, but since 1983, of course, we've had comparative fault, and that would be a jury issue. Are there any more questions?
Thank you.
It please the court.
Certainly.
Just want to make it clear, the issue of these reports was not perfected on appeal. There's nothing in appellant's brief that indicates if that's an issue. In fact, is it was clearly mentioned that it's not an issue on appeal, so it was not addressed by me on in our respondent's brief. Whether a co-employee breaches a duty which is separate and distinct from an employer's non-delegable duty to provide a safe workplace depends upon the particular facts and circumstances of the case. That came down by this court in Parr, and that is important with respect to this particular case, because this is a different and unique set of circumstances from other cases that have been handed down since the Peters and Parr case, and other cases from the other districts. I believe from the very beginning, this workplace was inherently dangerous workplace. This is unlike any other of the cases that I have read. It was never made safe. The second unique and distinguishing point is that plaintiff and the defendants and the crew had the very same responsibilities to carry out the non-delegable duties of the employer to de-energize the lines.
Don't the circumstances of the case distinguish between the plaintiff and Mr. Kidwell and Mr. Ogletree in that he arrived after those duties should have been carried out and was advised that are you claiming he had the ability to know that Mr. Kidwell didn't get close to the switch to turn it off and that he had the duty to disbelieve what he was told and go back and recheck everything?
Well, I understand what you're saying, Judge Breckenridge, is the fact that each and every crew member had the same responsibilities.
What I'm saying is maybe if he had been there at the same time and he was the one who was doing that part of the work, he might have had the same responsibility. But the facts are he wasn't there when Mr. Kidwell was charged with taking action.
The safety manual that has been referred to requires that each employee consider the power line energized until proven otherwise. Each employee has that responsibility.
Yeah, but
they
we're not
cannot
dealing
rely
here with,
upon another.
Counsel, we're not dealing here with whether there's contributory fault or what the injured party should have known. The question is, is this a transitory risk that was created by failing to follow the rules for which the co-employees can be responsible? Because sure, electricity is always dangerous, but we don't have any case I've ever said our normal rules don't apply. And if they created an increased transitory risk here by failing to follow the rules, by failing to safely de-energize it, why is that not a basis for co-employee liability under Peters and Parr?
The issue of the case is whether or not is a question of law. And the material facts.
Whether there's a duty, and you're asking us to hold as a matter of law in a case dealing with an inherently dangerous activity, you can never be outside the employer's non-delegable duties. And I know of no authority for that or anything in Peters and Parr that said such a thing. If an employee creates a transitory risk by jerry-rigging some system, the hoist system, by something else, why aren't they liable potentially, just like in any other situation, where the allegation is not that the injury incurred by the inherent risk of dealing with electricity, but by transitory risk created by the co-employees?
There was no transitory risk created. The risk in this case was permanent.
It
was always
counsel,
there. Yes, Your
counsel,
Honor. Yes,
if I could, thank
yes
you.
Please.
The transitory risk that is alleged is that they failed to de-energize the connection when it appeared that they had and affirmatively said it had been when it was not. That's nothing inherent in dealing with electricity.
The power line was energized from the very beginning. Each crew member was aware and they were knowledgeable that it existed. There at the tailgate meeting, which they did have, when they arrived at the scene, each and every journeyman lineman has that responsibility to know that.
But that's fine, but can you address the allegations of negligence here, which are that they failed to follow the policy of how you de-energize those lines, and that created a risk, and they affirmatively misinformed him that they had done so when they had not? That's a different question from what you're talking about, which is inherent duties of employees.
Each and every crew member had the same responsibility. So if Kidwell failed to do a duty, so did the plaintiff. So did the other crew members. They all had the same responsibilities.
That's not my question, sir.
But I thought the question was dealing with the transitory risk and creating, and whether or not there was a transitory risk created by the negligence of a co-employee and the details of the work. To me, the transitory risk is something that is, I realize that in Peters it was not defined as to what a transitory risk is, but a transitory risk is one that is fleeting and momentary. And that is not the case here. To have to create a personal duty of care, there must be a transitory risk, and there was not a transitory risk.
So telling him the electricity was cut off when it was not is not creating a risk that's not inherent in the... If the employer's rules had been followed, that wouldn't have happened, isn't that right?
No, if each and every member of the crew had followed it, it would not have happened.
Thank you. Go ahead.
That's what I'm saying is that you cannot distinguish between the fact that the employee had, the plaintiff had some duty that was less than the other crew members. As journeyman linemen, they have certain responsibilities, and the responsibilities are that they need to consider the power line energized until proven otherwise. Each crew member is responsible for their own safety, and each crew member cannot rely upon another member for their own safety. So the allegations of negligence that have been made against Kidwell hold true for the plaintiff. And so what I'm saying is we never got to the transitory risk. There was never a separate transitory risk that was created at the work site. When they left the warehouse...
You're familiar with the fact that we don't have contributory fault anymore. We have comparative fault.
I understand that, but these go to the issue of whether or not, as a question of law, there was ever a... as to whether or not the non-delegable duty to provide a safe workplace ever ended and a personal duty of care ever began. That's the big question in this case, did it ever end? And from the respondent's perspective, since the workplace was never made safe from to begin with, that was a failure of the employer to carry out its non-delegable duty to provide a safe workplace. And if that's the case, the responsibility lies with the employer, not the employee. That's where I see this case coming down to. The issue is, did the non-delegable duty of the employer ever end? And then, did the personal duty of care ever begin? And because of the unique nature of the circumstances and the responsibilities of the crew, the non-delegable duty of the employer to provide a safe workplace never ended. It stayed there until this accident happened. The other thing that I find with respect to the facts is that the equipment that was used at the work site was totally appropriate. The record reflects and our brief reflects that the employer had plaintiff had a retained expert they hired with respect to this case, and their retained expert was hired to testify as to the mistakes made by the crew, and it was his opinion, plaintiff's own opinion, expert's opinion, was that the crew did not follow the proper safety procedures. And that included a criticism of each and every member of that crew. And even though Mr. Ogletree was the foreman, it does not relieve the crew members from being responsible for their own safety. Essentially, everyone is responsible for their own safety.
And why is that not a question for the jury as to Mr. Connor's comparative fault? It's still a submissible case, and the jury determines how much is his fault versus how much is someone else's fault.
Because whether or not at the time of the accident there was the there was involved a failure to carry out the non-delegable duties of the employer, or whether or not a personal duty of care had been created. That is a question of law, as I understand it.
And so you're saying every single employee has a responsibility to carry a responsibility for the non-delegable duties.
That is correct. And you say each crew member.
Can you point to a case that would support that argument?
I can point to the safety manual. Every safety manual that I'm aware of has that provision.
A violation of a safety manual is what may be the breach of a duty, but I'm unaware of any case that says each employee is responsible, no matter what their job description is, for the non-delegable duty, and unless they do everything in the safety manual, then they can't be found negligent.
And where would be the end of that application? There would be none of these cases would exist if any time any employee did anything outside, did anything inappropriate or that caused injury, you would in effect be saying that's always part of the non-delegable duty. And what the cases say is no, if you either you create an affirmative risk or negatively you act in some way that creates an increased transitory risk, you can be held liable.
Judge Stitt, in this particular case, I'm not aware of any other case where we're dealing with an inherently dangerous place, and I'm not aware of any other case in which both the plaintiff and the defendant had the same responsibilities. The responsibilities are not different between the plaintiff and the defendants. They have the same duties to provide, to carry out the employer's non-delegable duties.
Well, but
duty.
That's always true of co-employees who are doing the same job are going to have the same responsibility. The effect of adopting your argument would be that you could not sue co-employees, and you clearly can sue co-employees.
As I read the Marshall case requires that there be a safe workplace and then there be a transitory event. In this particular case, there was neither a safe workplace nor was there a transitory event. And as I understand the Marshall case, that is the basis for finding a personal duty of care, is that there be a safe workplace and then there be a transitory event. Neither occurred in this case because it was always unsafe. It was always inherently dangerous, and the entire crew failed to test.
So if they followed all your work rules, they could have been killed in this way or injured?
Say again?
So had they followed all your work rules, the same risk would have been there and the same injury would have occurred?
No, if they would have followed the work rules, the line would have been open, tested, and grounded.
So there wouldn't have been this risk.
There was a mistake made by not doing that.
Right.
But the mistake was by the entire crew.
But it would have been safe had they followed the work rules to work with, because you don't send your employees out to work in unsafe conditions. That's why you set up those rules.
When they started their job, the job site was inherently dangerous. Had they followed the safety rules, had the entire crew followed the safety rules, then they would have made the job site safe by opening, testing, and grounding. The entire crew failed to do that. And in addition to that, as the foreman of the crew, Mr. Ogletree, is in the same shoes as Mr. Terrio in the Peters case, is that his duty was to supervise. But in his duty as supervising the crew, he was the functional equivalent. He was the alter ego standing in the place of Intercounty Electric Cooperative. And for the reasons set forth in Peter, he likewise should the summary judgment that was granted to him should be affirmed. And with respect to Mr. Kidwell, he had every member of the crew exactly had the same exact responsibilities as Mr. Kidwell. So to point the finger at Kidwell is pointing the finger to everyone. There's no pecking order with respect to the responsibilities of the co-op's safety manual and the safety manuals that relied upon by plaintiff's own expert. What I am saying is exactly what plaintiff's own expert has said with respect to the duties and responsibilities of each crew member. The mistakes were made by all. They all created this violation. They were all mistaken in not testing and de-energizing and grounding the line. This isn't where The plaintiff had certain responsibilities, and the defendants had certain responsibilities. Every one of them had the responsibility to carry out the non-delegable duty of the employer. And for those reasons, we believe the summary judgment for the defendants should be affirmed on appeal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Because a task is inherently dangerous does not excuse specific negligence of a co-employee, which leads to injury to another co-employee. The Kelso case years ago talked about that and said if it's complex, if it's dangerous, the employer's job is to promulgate rules for the safety of everyone. And then it's up to the co-employees to follow those rules. These linemen are, this was a typical job for them. They're used to being around 7,200 volt lines, and they know how to safely act and follow the rules. Kidwell was specifically picked to de-energize the lines at that switch, and he chose to not follow the specific safety rules. Ogletree condoned it, and the transitory risk arose when Kidwell said, "All clear," and Ogletree said to Michael Connor, "All clear," and Michael Connor just happened to be the first lineman to reach up to cut the line and be shocked and thrown to the ground. It was permanently dangerous to that point because of the specific negligence of Ogletree and Kidwell. Later, after Michael Connor went to the hospital, they followed the safety rules and took out the lines and the transformers. They followed the safety rules and finally completed the job. But the risk occurred when they specifically, negligently, affirmatively stated, "It's all clear." Can you respond to Mr. Evans' argument that Marshall requires that the workplace be made safe and then there be a deviation, a breach of duty that caused the injury?
I don't believe the common law or Peters says you have to have a safe workplace that's made dangerous. I mean, this was a safe workplace if Kidwell and Ogletree had not specifically chose to ignore the safety rules. So I don't believe that is the law or should be the law because, again, it's a risk. The risk was them not affirmatively following the safety rules and making the workplace safe. And I think what respondent wants to do is just spread the blame and say, well, you know, all right, Kidwell, he messed up, he didn't follow the rules, Ogletree did too, but everybody's responsible for that. Well, no, Kidwell was chosen by the supervisor for that specific task. And when Michael Connor came on the scene, he saw Ogletree and the journeyman on the platform working, assumed it was safe. They were within a few feet of these energized lines. And then when Ogletree said, "Come on up, Mike, it's all clear," that was a specific act of negligence, affirmative act of negligence on the part of Ogletree.
Your time is up.
All right.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.
Thank you.